Being 8 o'clock, call the meeting of State Government Finance Division to order, and welcome back, members. Hope we all had a good summer. And I also remind everybody that Monday evening, we've got a notice went out, but we have an after session. We'll have a special meeting. A bill got referred to us that we need to get. Well, a bill's going to be pending referral to us, thank you. That we have to get moved out, so.
Not tonight.
Other than that, I said, so with that, we've taken the roll. The minutes, first I'm going to start, before we do the minutes, I'm going to do some introductions here. We have a new member of our committee, Sydney. You want to say a little bit about yourself? And
sure. My name is Sydney Jordan. I represent 60A, which is Northeast Minneapolis and Southeast Como. So it's a nearby district with a lot of great things happening. It's home to the Northeast Arts District, the Mississippi River, and it's a really great place to be, and I'm really excited to be part of this committee. So thank you in advance for answering any questions I might have. So exciting to be here.
And Sydney's replacing our vice. We lost our vice chair. He got moved as he became the chair of property taxes, and they moved him to taxes. They wanted him on that committee, and they meet at the same time. So that Andrew, we lost Andrew Carlson, and our new vice chair is Ginny Claiborne. Been on the committee. We also have a new DFL caucus researcher, Eamon.
Eamon.
Eamon. Okay, I'm going to get it wrong one way or the
Not
other.
Not very phonetic.
Yeah, Eamon Gallagher, and so we all came into the committee. And we have a page today, Kyle Roach. He may or may not be our permanent page, but for right now, for today, he's our page. So with that, we can go on. Minutes, you'll get a chance to look at the minutes from the last meeting. Representative Quam.
I have reviewed, and what?
We have two minutes
which
here.
Which set do you wish to do first?
Why don't we do the 16th, do them in chronological order.
I'd move to adopt the minutes as recorded.
Motions have been made to move the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motions at minutes for the 16th are passed. And then we have the May 23rd, Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for May 23rd.
Any questions on the minutes or comments and corrections? If not, the minutes have been moved. All in favor of the minutes from the 23rd, May 23rd, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes have been approved. As we go forward here, we're a finance committee, and we're going to hear some bills. We got bills that we got referred back to us, which is normal practice from session, that we have to move back out of here. Also, there's some changes to the way we'll be doing bills. Instead of the memo going to, this was agreed upon as with the minority leader and the speaker, but instead of bills being sent to us by memo, new bills that are coming to us, we're going to be sent directly here to us, and then we're gonna have to move them to the floor to get moved to Ways and Means. There's a couple of bills we have here that were old bills that we had that were in Ways and Means that came back to us by memo. We're going to send them directly back to Ways and Means. But from now on, any new bills that come to us will come to us, be referred directly to us, and then we're going to have to go through the old procedure of putting to the floor and then a vote on the floor to move into Ways and Means. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just for clarity, we are returning to the old standard way of moving bills?
We are turning to one of the old standard ways that we did bills, yes. The other method was a way that was done in the past also. We're moving to the one that was most recently, the way it was done most recently before last session. With the exception of 2019 bills, as I mentioned, yes. Other questions? Okay. The first bill on our order is House File 3094, and that's a procedural motion. We need to refer that to transportation. Because there's policy issues in there. Anyway, I'll move that House File 3094 be referred back to, referred to transportation.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Procedural question on 3094. We're referring it on to transportation. Would it be the understanding that this bill will be transferred back to us in our possession afterwards?
Representative Albright, that's correct. This bill would eventually come back to us, but the procedural or the policy issues are more in transportation than our, so that's why it's going there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? If not, all in favor of moving 3094 to, of the motion to move 3094 to be referred to transportation policy and finance, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Bill's referred. To get back in the swing of things here too myself. House file 2053. Did I see Hunter? I saw Hunter there. Yes, I thought I saw. And I'll move House File 2053 to be referred to the General Register. Welcome to the committee, and you can start proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to join you today. Happy first committee hearing of the 2020 session. House File 2053 is a bill that we heard last year, or that I presented last year, that would codify into law the Office of Enterprise Sustainability, which seeks to increase the efficiency and sustainability of the operation of government agencies in the state of Minnesota. It's created by executive order in 2017 and reaffirmed by Governor Walz. Essentially, this is a significant cost saving to the state of Minnesota. I believe that it has justified its annual expenditure in terms of the amount of money that is saved through sustainability measures that that come forward through the Office of Enterprise Sustainability. So with that, I'm going to leave it to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Good morning. My name is Ann Hunt, and I'm the executive, the director of the Office of Enterprise Sustainability. Thank you so much for your support of this bill last session, and thank you for the opportunity just to talk about it briefly today in House File 2053. And I also want to thank Representative Cantrell for offering this bill. Our office was created to provide leadership, consistency, and accountability to make state government more sustainable. It was modeled after similar offices in the private sector that companies have. Our office supports the 24 cabinet-level agencies to meet its defined sustainability goals with a focus on reducing costs and implementing environmentally and socially responsible solutions. The services that our office provides to government to improve government efficiency, to avoid some of the long-term costs of operating government, and to improve accountability and transparency. And it's important, it allows the state to really lead by example. While our office is modeled after the best practices in the private sector, it really is unique to state governments. In order for the long-term authority and credibility, it's important that our office be codified in the Department of Administration statutes. And we seek to work, we see our work as kind of central to how government should be operating and continuing moving forward. To learn more about our work, you can look at our, we have an annual report that I can give to the page and give out. I know you had a one-pager in your materials that were distributed. And we also have an online dashboard that, at sustainabilitymn.gov, which would show kind of how each of the agencies is doing. And that tool itself is really, really unique in state government, that we're that transparent. So with that, I can thank you so much, and I can take any questions.
Any questions? Members, I misspoke when I said we have to, this is one of the ones that we had last year that was passed to Ways and Means that came back to us. We need to refer it back to Ways and Means with the recommendation that it be re-referred to the General Register. So, members, any questions? Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, just a brief comment. I just want to congratulate the office on the good work you do, and note that Minnesota has almost all of its Fortune 500 companies have taken leadership that stands us out nationally in terms of commitments that 3M has made and General Mills and Cargill and others on the sustainability front. And I don't think we want our government to be falling behind, particularly when we know that a lot of this can save money from energy efficiency and water efficiency and the rest. So thank you for the work, and thank you, Representative Cantrell, for this bill. I think it's a great idea.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cantrell, the Office of Enterprise Sustainability was created by an executive order by Governor Dayton. Is that correct?
Representative Cantrell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, that is correct.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cantrell, is there a finite term on that executive order?
Cantrell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, the executive order was reaffirmed by Governor Walz, and I believe 2019, yeah.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cantrell, in typical fashion, we typically codify before we create. So it seems like we've got the cart before the horse in this manner. And now we're putting it into statute. It also notes that it's an interagency payment system. Is that the intention going forward, or are there changes that we could anticipate if you're codifying the office?
Representative Cantrell, you got a puzzled look on your face.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's just how my face normally looks. But Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, could you elaborate or rephrase your question, please? I would strive to understand.
Happy to.
Representative Albright.
Sure, happy to. So my understanding is that the office is funded by interagency agreements as they work with other departments to assist them with improvements in efficiency and whatnot. Is that the intention going forward? And if so, what is the cost so far been incurred by those, or the work of the agency on behalf of the other departments?
Representative Cantrell.
Mr. Chair, I believe I'll let my testifier elaborate on that.
All right.
Proceed, yes.
All right, Chair. Representative. Yes, our current cost model is an interagency agreement between the departments, and that is what we anticipate moving forward. Then your second question was, how much is the annual budget? Is that correct? Okay, the annual budget is currently $575,000. We have 3 full-time staff, but the majority of the costs are towards the data management, the IT costs associated with managing literally millions and millions of data sets. We take all of the information for the utility bills for over 3,000 buildings, all of the fuel costs, and all that gets aggregated into one database. And then we have a public dashboard that indicates, you know, how the various agencies are all doing. So those are the costs associated with the office.
Representative Albright. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of my questions kind of paralleled what Representative Albright was just asking. And I guess what I'm looking at here is the long-term impact of this is it's been done under executive order. Therefore, it was the governor trying to figure out, I guess, how they were going to pay for this thing. What would be the difference now that we would codify it compared to the way it's operating right now relative to the financial aspects?
Representative Cantrell or testifier?
Again, Chair, Representative, we're anticipating moving forward as with the interagency agreements to continue that. So there's not a fiscal note associated with this bill. Is that what you're asking?
Well, there is a fiscal note with it. It shows no zero cost because it's interagency, but it's already up and running. Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, there is a fiscal note, and I obviously noticed that there wasn't any cost, which is really a good deal when we get all the service for no money. But I guess what I'm wondering going forward, now that we're going to codify this, apparently I'm assuming from what I'm hearing that maybe all of the other agencies are paying kind of an assessment for this now, or how is this working right now, and I guess how will it be different once this bill would become law? As far as the funding sources, the revenue sources, where's the revenue coming from now, and would that change, or how would it change if indeed this is enacted.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vogel. We're not anticipating any change in the function or the funding mechanism for this Office of Enterprise Sustainability should this bill become law. It essentially is just a preservation for the continuity of the solvency or of the long-term existence of the office. So everything else kind of remains constant. Representative Vogel, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and I'm sorry if I'm not asking the question right. Where is the funding? How is it being funded right now? Who's paying the bill right now? And how is the money coming in to the entity right now? Who's actually getting the money there? I guess that would be an easier place to start.
Representative Vogel, test. Yeah.
Representative, again, there's interagency agreements with the 24 cabinet level agencies. They each contribute a portional amount towards the effort. As I said, we provide a lot of technical assistance for them in managing their data and their metrics. I think one of the reasons why we are urging you to consider codifying is we need to continue to measure what is being done. I think that this has really helped the agencies focus their attention on efforts that are going to reduce their energy, reduce their water. When they look at all these numbers, it really helps them, as I said, have a focus on those activities that are going to help them reduce those fossil fuels or energy or water, but then also reduce their long-term operating costs and thereby saving taxpayers money in the future.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you. And that's what I was getting at. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because I think we started something like this called Minute many years ago, and all of the agencies are now paying a fee to this new thing that we started. And my concern here is that we are codifying something and starting another entity that will be charging all of these other agencies, which then are going to be coming to us asking for more money because they're going to have another bill to pay. And I guess maybe there is no, on the fiscal note, maybe there is no dollar thing that could be said that there isn't, but there is. Because once we codify this, we're going to have all of these agencies coming before us, and it's going to be part of their budget. And you know, we kind of lose control, and that's my concern, Mr. Chair, is that when we do stuff like this, that we're permanently making additions to each agency's budget, and therefore we're going to have to fund this if we codify it. And I'm not so sure that it's ready for prime time yet until we know exactly what it's going to cost us in the future, because once we do it, they're going to come and sit right there in that chair and say, we have to have this money because you started this entity. Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Cantrell or the testifier, these agreements that are with the various agencies, they are for a term certain, and so one agency could decide they don't need to participate in any further, correct?
Representative Cantrell.
Chair, Representative, again, under executive order. The executive order does direct all the 24 cabinet-level agencies to do these goals. There are there is an interagency agreement. So yes, yeah, so I think if they didn't find value in the work, they could not do the interagency agreement. It's for a two-year period for the biennium.
So, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so if an agency found themselves in a dilemma with their own budget, but they were obligated under the two-year contract, where would that money come from?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair and Representative, I'm not sure where each of the agencies have taken the budget items for their agent to fund their organization, so I'm not qualified to be able to answer that.
Final question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Representative Cantrell, whether or not this bill becomes law, the agency will continue under the executive order until such time as another governor decides either to reaffirm it or not. Is that correct?
Representative Cantrell, Ms. Hunt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, yes, that's my understanding.
Mr. Chair, so
Representative Albright.
Just as a kind of a final comment, what we're trying to do is we're make sure that an agency stays in place, whether or not the agencies use it or not. And as Representative Vogel said, I think what we're trying to do, what this is attempting to do, is to establish another agency that would become dependent upon funding from the agencies, which then, as Representative Vogel suggested, raises their budgets as well. So I would urge a closer look at this than we are taking right now from an expenditure perspective.
Well, members, this is a bill that we were, and we had this last year, and we moved it out of here to Ways and Means, and we held it over possible inclusion, and it was in our omnibus bill last year, and then didn't quite make it past the conference committee. So, we've had this discussion last year, but Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Cantrell, for your work, and Ms. Hunt too. I just want to respond to the conversation. As I'm looking through the report here and the 2018 Enterprise Scorecard, I see that this office has helped the government avoid $32 million in costs since 2005, which is about $2.5 million per year. So that seems like a pretty good value for the state government as a whole, and I feel like we're losing sight of the forest for the trees in some of this conversation. So I think this is a good effort that should continue.
I have more of a comment than a question. Representative Hertog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cantrell, my question kind of segues on what Representative Vogel was asking about. When I was looking at this brochure here that was just distributed, one of the goals was a 25% total spending priority on priority contracts that they be sustainably purchased. And that's in the area of procurement. And I guess it made me wonder a little bit, with 24 agencies being required that spending on their priority contracts are sustainably purchased, does that mean that a lot of state spending from these 25 agencies may come with a higher contract cost in order to be sustainably purchased? And if so, does anybody know what that number is or what kind of increased cost that's going to be with regard to our budgetary process in the future?
Ms. Hunt?
Sure, I can answer some, and Ron may have to, Chair and Representative, circle back. The priority contracts, for example, for sustainability is in all of our computer systems and electronics. For example, we buy ENERGY STAR rated appliances that are going to have lower energy costs associated with operating those things, thereby saving the agency's money. Okay. So those are some of the things that are, it doesn't apply to every, you know, to everything. But you know, that's one of the main pieces. The state has actually been nationally recognized for our sustainable purchasing procedures, so that we're thinking about both the environmental impact, but most importantly, some of the long-term fiscal impacts of those purchases.
Representative Hurton.
Thank you. I think that helps clarify those things, as particularly with regard to buying fixtures or things that are going to be operating. I guess I was looking at some of the contracts within an agency, looking at maybe a transportation contract, for example, of requiring certain materials being used that are sustainable, and just wondering if it was going that deep in the weeds with this business of priority contracts, whatever that means.
Chair.
Representative Hunt, or Ms. Hunt.
Thank you.
Sorry for demoting you.
It's early in the morning and I haven't had enough coffee. I apologize. I think
none of us have.
Following the protocol. Chair and Representative, no, it hasn't gone into the construction materials. As I said, it's regular daily products that we buy. For example, another one is there's a requirement about buying 30% recycled paper. And that paper, you know, many agencies buy from Boise Cascade, which is in northern Minnesota, you know, helping support Minnesota companies or Minnesota jobs, as well as having an environmental impact.
Thank you. Any further questions, comments? Representative Qualm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for clarification, on pages 18 and 19 in your glossy, I'm seeing multiple entries of minus 100%. So if that's in water, would I then interpret that as being a 15% increase in utilization of water?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair, Representative, exactly which number are you pointing
18
to?
18 and 19.
Okay, those, okay. Yes, we have an annual scorecard for each of the agencies, and this would be their progress towards meeting the goal. I think water has been a little bit of a challenge for some of the agencies. It's not something, energy, a lot of the agencies have been tracking it. They put their data into a database called B3 that gets loaded up into our sustainable reporting tool. A lot of the agencies weren't tracking their water consumption. There are campuses, for example, that may be on a well and they don't have a meter on that, and we're trying to figure out what they actually consume. Some of the agencies might only have one meter, water meter for multiple buildings, or they might not have separately metered indoor water use from external water use. So water is an area that needs improvement for many of the agencies.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even though the testifier didn't answer the question of minus 100 score, you know, is that being negative your goal of reducing 15%, so you're increasing it. I also noticed that you stop at 100, so it isn't really clear as if, you know, they've gone beyond that in either direction. But the testifier did touch on the fact that they have poor data collection and tracking. Are there any other areas where there's poor data collection and tracking that's being utilized to generate this beautiful glossy document?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair, Representative, I'll need to go back and look exactly. I don't know off the top of my head why some of the agencies might have had a negative score on those. Some of them are in leased buildings where we may not have good data for them. Their facilities are in there. As I said, I think water is something that we've been improving on, collecting the data for the various agencies. But in leased buildings, they may not be separately metered for that office space that one agency occupies, for example. So, but I will need to follow up with you on why the particulars. I assume you're looking at education and human services, and I'll need to look at that.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've been touching on the water. I assume we have a much better handle on fleet, and I'm noticing multiple ones that are minus 100%. And is, again, that meaning that there's, instead of 100% goal of reduction of 30%, does that mean that all of these are 30% greater use of fossil fuels? Or I'm just trying to get clarity, because your whole being is a feedback, information, data, so that agencies can make a better decision. And if it's not clear about the data, and it's not clear about the accuracy of the data collection, it sort of devalues some of the functionality here. So you talked about water. Can you enlighten us on the fleet?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair, Representative Palm. The scorecard numbers are their progress, the percentage progress towards goal, which is a little bit difficult sometimes to explain. We were trying to give an indication that we have this 30% progress towards goal, or 30% reduction goal, and they may be not meeting that. I'm sorry, I got confused here. I'll start over again. Specifically, this is a snapshot in time on 2018. 2018, as you might recall, was both a colder winter and a warmer summer than the previous year. So in fossil fuel consumption, the agency, the entire enterprise, did consume more fossil fuel because MnDOT and Metropolitan Council did a lot of plowing and used a lot of fuel for operating. And those agencies, for example, the fuel consumption I think Met Council consumes about 60% of all the fuel that the entire enterprise consumes. And MnDOT is about 24%, I think, 25%. So when those agencies use a lot more fuel than the previous year, as they did in 18, because they were plowing streets and highways and other things, that throws the scores off for the entire enterprise. There were also other agencies that had negative impacts. The energy consumed in 2018 in buildings was also greater than it was in the previous year because it was a colder winter and a warmer summer.
Mr. Chair,
I
understand all the anecdotal comments, and I agree with, and you know, I've lived in Minnesota, so we understand. However, the questions have been aimed at what is recorded, reported on pages 18 and 19, and I'm trying to understand when you give, you do have a lot of green 100%, and then you have an aggregated for the enterprise. Do you just stop it at 100% green and stop at 100% negative and red? I'm trying to interpret what these numbers mean. You've got goals, and you could let the committee know, one, what does the 100% actually mean, and then two, let the committee know, and this can be offline after this hearing, let the committee know what areas we have questionable or lack of data collection so that we're not really certain about what we're feeding back, so we can know how things could be improved and actually do a better job of supplying the mission statement of improving the state utilization of resources. And I apologize, I thought that you were aware of the details of the mechanics that was in this, and Mr. Chair, if that information could be disseminated to all the members so we could have a further understanding, and then if this does come back and, or we hear it on the floor, then we can more intelligently and informed make a decision.
Ms. Hunt, if you can get that information that he's requesting back to us. I know this is it's just starting up in 2018, and that's why we want to put it in statute so we can continue and track these over time.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I want to say our data is very good. And it says 100% in green, it means that they have met the goal of the 30% reduction. So in the agencies under greenhouse gas emissions, those agencies, primarily because of the decarbonization of the electric grid, have met those goals. If they're 100% negative, that means that they are more than 30% negative progress towards meeting those goals. That's where we're at. And the data is very good, but I can happily circle back. Thank you.
Representative Green, I think the last question, we need to get moved on here to other.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to ask anybody. You raised a couple of questions for me. I'll ask the first one. When you're talking about cost savings, are your numbers indicators only of what was saved, or does that savings also include what it costs to do these upgrades?
Ms. Hunt.
Chair, Representative, it's cost avoidance. So there's going to be a period of time where you're investing in energy efficiency improvements, reducing the costs of those buildings. So there may be a short term, they may have a savings that period. But what we're also articulating is this is the costs avoided for operating those buildings into the future, because we know energy costs, for example, continue to increase.
Oh, thank you for that. But then, you know, the comment on that is that if you buy energy efficient water heater, and that water heater costs you $700, and over the course of the life of that water heater, you might save $500. And so those are things to consider. You also said that your 100% ratings here, or, you know, whatever you're gaining, reflects the transition from carbon fuels to other types of energy. So really is the savings coming within that agency, or is it coming because of things that were done outside? If you follow what on my question,
Ms. Hunt.
The greenhouse gas emission number is a combination of things. All the other data is feeding into the greenhouse gas emission data. So on some of the agencies where they're in Xcel's service territory, for example, and Xcel's service territory has made significant investments to decarbonize their grid by moving more wind and solar on it, they have better scores. But we also need to also account for all of the greenhouse gas emissions associated with fuel consumption, energy consumption, if they have, you know, backup generators. All of those numbers are included in those greenhouse gas emission numbers. So am I in?
I'll just finish up.
Just finish up.
And so there's no more questions, but I guess the point is, it looks like, you know, maybe these agencies would have realized a lot of these savings just from what Xcel Energy has already done. And so, you know, maybe there's that to consider as well.
Yeah. No, Representative, I'm sorry, I didn't remember the last part of your question. No, they have a goal to reduce their energy consumption by 30%. They're not going to be able to meet that goal of reducing energy consumption by 30% in their buildings because of the decarbonization of the electric grid. They still need to reduce the energy consumed in their buildings by that amount.
Representative Keel, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize you said last question. Something occurred to me in this conversation. This is a new program, right?
Yes.
However, in our first part of the scorecard, it says that there are $32 million in avoided costs starting in 2005. So what was going on before this office started?
Ms. Hunt.
Representative, Chair, Representative. You may recall in 2007, there was a bipartisan support for a bill called the Next Generation Energy Act, which also then there were requirements for agencies to reduce their energy consumption. So when we developed this office and our scorecard, agencies that were able to verify where they were at the baseline of 2005, and they made energy improvements, we've had their starting point at 2005. We did not necessarily have good data for some of the other agencies. So for the Department of Administration, who works on and coordinates all of the buildings here on the Capitol complex, they had very, very good data about where their baseline energy consumption was for 2005, and then kept track of every single energy improvement that they've done during that period of time. So we wanted that reflected in the numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Keel.
Just my comment is, so some of the agencies were already managing this internally.
Yeah. Chair. Yes, but I think what is unique about this is that we're all now, all 24 agencies are counting things apples to apples and really measuring exactly what their energy consumption would be in every single building over 5,000 square feet that they have and all of their campuses.
Members, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I renew my motion that House File 2053 be referred back to the Committee on Ways and Means with the recommendation that it be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The ayes have it. The bill's referred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you very much.
Representative, House File 3006, Representative Freiberg, and I see the Secretary of State's here. Representative Freiberg, please explain your bill.
Sure. Should I move House File 3006? I believe, is it going to the Government Operations Committee?
The bill is, the motion I have is to refer to Government Operations. Correct.
I will move House File 3006 to the Government Operations.
I understand the chair there is kind of persnickety at times.
Yeah. Well, I'll see what I can do about it. thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is a pretty straightforward bill. It would put us in line with 46 other states in the United States. Right now, when, as many members know here, when we receive money through the HAVA program, the Help America Vote Act, from the federal government to deal with election security, it needs to be, for the state to actually accept those funds, it needs to be approved by the legislature. Just my experience the last couple of years has been that that process has not added much to anything, to the better good. In my mind, it's actually been more of a roadblock. I feel like election security has become held hostage to the legislature's budget concerns, and I just don't see it as a valuable addition to the process. So this bill just makes a very simple change to state law. It just says when the federal government allocates HAVA funding to Minnesota, as long as the Secretary of State follows the requirements and criteria set out in federal law, then the money is allocated to them. And as I said, that would put us in line with 46 other states. So the Secretary of State is here. I don't know if you want to speak or give some of the history on how this came about.
Secretary Simon, welcome to the committee. Please
thank
state
you,
your name
Chair
for the
members.
Tape.
I appreciate it. Representative Jordan, welcome to the legislature.
Thank you.
It's good to be before you again, and thank you. This actually, surprisingly, maybe to all of you members, is not an initiative of our office. We appreciate it being brought forward. We did not initiate this legislation. I do support it. So Section 5.30 was put into statute and signed into law in May of 2003. I think, Mr. Chair, you're the only member in this room who was there at that time. So it was put into place at that time. For reasons that are still unclear, at least to me, maybe you remember, Mr. Chair, but they're unclear to me, that's for sure. And in that same bill that initiated or started this statute, it included authorization for $6.5 million for then Secretary of State Mary Kiffmeyer to use that money. So it had never been used to hold up the money. It had been used, I assume, as some sort of oversight provision. Fast forward to 2018, which is the next time this became an issue. There were no federal Help America Vote Act or HAVA funds issued between 2003 and 2018. In 2018, there were funds issued to Minnesota and every state in the country. And that was in response to what happened in 2016. You've heard me and many others talk about what happened there. Not only nationally, but in Minnesota, where we were one of the 21 states that was targeted by a foreign government. So in response, Congress and President Trump saw fit to give the state another batch of this Help America Vote Act money. And in 46 or 47 out of the other states, that's it. The money went, as Congress and the President intended, to the state's chief election official for the purposes set forth, very narrow purposes set forth in federal statute. But here in Minnesota and in two or three other states, there's a speed bump, and 5.30 is the speed bump. It never has been, and I would venture to guess, was never intended to be a device to make this very important security money into a political football, but that's what happened. And it was not due to anything that anyone here in this room did. In fact, it was overwhelmingly bipartisan in the House. I think the vote on the House floor was like 126 to something on the House floor. So it's not the fault of anyone in this room, so far as I know. But in the other body, in the other chamber, there were those who were holding up this money. For what reason? It's not clear to me. If you ask me in good faith to put into a verbal paragraph the substantive reason why this money was held up, I can't give it to you. I lived this for a year and a half, and I still can't give you the substantive reason, leading me to conclude that it was, trade bait for an end of session deal that may or may not have even included elections. It could have been a provision in the tax bill or something else for all we know. But that's not what this provision, I would imagine, was meant for. And more to the point, and I'll get to the point, that delay of over 15 months, actually 16 months, put us at risk. It put us at risk. There are things that we can't do in time for the 2020 election that we could have done had we gotten this money on time. So this is a speed bump. Having the state legislature sign off on money that has been approved by the federal government, by the President of the United States, and by the Congress. And I just ask all of you, whatever your opinions on election security or the funds or whether it was wise or unwise, all of us are passing through. I'm passing through. I'm the 22nd Secretary of State. I'm not going to be here forever. None of you are going to be here forever. Think not who's the D or who's the R or whatever. Do you really want a statute on the books in any area of government where the state legislature gets to shortstop money that is coming from the federal government for an intended purpose that the President of the United States and the Congress has. Imagine the mischief that could be played by any political party in any of the actors that succeed any of us in any of our roles. If they didn't like something the President or Congress had done, they could just shortstop it, write a statute into state law saying if ag money comes to Minnesota, the state legislature has to sign off on it. If family planning money comes to Minnesota, you got to sign off on it. If criminal justice or border control money, the legislature has to sign off on it. When I talk nationally to other people about this, colleagues in other states of both parties, and I say, did you know that there's a law on the books in Minnesota that says when federal election security money comes to Minnesota, even though the state didn't appropriate it, even though the President of the United States and Congress intended it for very narrow purposes, that there's a law on the books that says the state has to sign off on it? They can't believe it, and they've never heard of such a thing. So I just ask you to think not in the situational moment of who occupies what position, but why would we have a law like this? And why is it that we went through an unnecessary delay, no one's fault in this room, of almost a year and a half of federal election security money that has put us this year in this contest at a higher risk than they otherwise would have been? That's the pitch. It's a law that doesn't need to be there. Don't think of me. Think of someone who's going to succeed in this office in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, and whether we really want something like this on the books. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Secretary of State. This question is more for you, but I note in the fiscal note, and I don't know if you have that in front of you, but maybe Representative Freiberg can speak to this as well. I note that on the first page of the fiscal note, it talks about an expenditure, a match from state funds equivalent to roughly about $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. On page two of it, it says that the federal funds are not going to be hung up by it, but that the match is still requisite as an appropriation from the state before December 21st, 2021. So, do you know what that process looks like, and have we appropriated that money, Representative Freiberg, or where does that come from?
Yes.
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Albright. So the way the federal government has done it, which I think is reasonable, is in that first batch of money that they made available in 2018 to all the states, and the rule was the same for all 18 or for all 50 states, they said that there's going to be a 5% match. So there's really two things going on. Number one is the legislature under 5.30 has to authorize the use of the underlying money. If you're interested in the particular numbers, last time it was 6.6 million, 5% of that's 330,000. So the deal was Minnesota had to authorize our use of that money. And then a separate inquiry is whether if you put up the match, which you did, and thank you very much. This time, the federal government, since it only came 2 years later, they said, you know, we're going to ask for more skin in the game from the states. We're going to give you a little bit more money. Last time it was 6.6, this time it's 7.4 million. But this time, instead of a 5% match, we're going to ask the states to pony up 20%. So that's where the, I think it's 1,480,000, something like that, comes in. So no, we haven't done that yet. We're asking for that as part of a supplemental budget request. We've asked the governor to put that in his supplemental budget request. That hasn't been revealed yet. I hope he'll do that. We have 2 years to get the match. Now, the key thing is, though, you can spend the underlying money before you get the match. So if the legislature doesn't repeal this law, and if this year the legislature authorizes us to use the $7.4 million, we can start spending that before we get the match. But we do have to get the match, as you said, by December of 2021.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of procedural things then for Representative Freiberg. As this moves forward then and the appropriation might be tagged onto it, would it be your intention to bring it back to state government finance then as well? And this is for procedurally for the chair of this committee as well, jurisdiction being for finance, would you need to come back to here?
My understanding is this is more of a policy bill that to change that, but if this money were to come forward, we would have to include either in this year's budget, supplemental budget, or next year in the budget, the money to match it. But right now, that would be a separate bill to do that. It would probably be part of the appropriation bill that we would create as a committee to match that money. It would be in our supplemental bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Final, just quick question then for the chair of government operations. This is effective of elections, but I don't see it going or re-referred at this point to the election subcommittee. Would it be the intention that from government operations it would go to the subcommittee on elections or no?
Representative Freiberg.
It is my intention that it will go to the election subcommittee. We don't yet. That committee is operating differently from Ways and Means at this point, so I have to use the dreaded memo process to refer it to elections, but it is my intention to do that for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And mine is a comment, you know, because of, thank you to Secretary of State for coming here. But, you know, you talk about the legislature holding stuff up. And in some cases, that is our job. And we have in this institution and in this country checks and balances. Because your office, whether it's you or, you know, somebody far into the future, could end up someone there who is unscrupulous, someone who's not obeying the law. And, you know, when you take away the checks and balances, and especially away from this body, you take away the transparency. And so there's a lot of things to consider here before we just go ahead and once again abdicate our authority as the purse of Minnesota to say we just don't like the way things went in the last biennium. We don't like what the Senate did, so therefore we're going to cut ourselves out of this and just let somebody else handle it. Why are we here? And this is what we continue to do here. And I think there's another bill today that does somewhat of the same thing, where the House of Representatives is just continues to say we're not able to do this. So, and if we're not able to do it, why'd we run for office? Why are we here? Now, this is our job. Our job is to oversee other parts of government. So I think that the way this is working, you said yourself that this might be even have been an anomaly in the last election. I guess the term I'm thinking maybe not apply specifically, but it's don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't, just because there was one incident that you don't like, don't give away your authority.
That was more of a comment than a question. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, we've had some firsthand experience with this together. As we work through that conference committee. Question is it possible, if this is passed, is it possible that the federal money could be spent by Secretary of State office even if the appropriation wasn't already approved by the House for their share? Is it possible?
Secretary Simon, I think you answered that, but go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, thank you. No, we can't spend any of this money without legislative authorization. And, you know, I would only add, since I've got the microphone, you know, Representative Green, I respect your comment, but imagine a political situation. Oversight is what you want. Imagine, hate to get into politics here, but let me just game this out here. Imagine that the DFL controls both chambers next time. And they decide that when it comes to ICE money, we ought to insert ourselves there. Let's pass a 5.30 bill that has to do with ICE. Let's have to do with, one that has to do with border security, one that has to do with health and human services. And the state legislature will insert itself in every instance where they disapprove of something that the Trump administration is doing or that the Trump administration sends money to Minnesota. It can insert itself. I would argue, Representative Green, the opposite of checks and balances. Our Constitution sets up a federal supremacy clause. I think this is an unconstitutional law. And if it weren't a matter of the time and expense, I think it would be, you never want to say slam dunk, because that's not true. But I think there would be a very compelling case for having a federal court kick out this law. States can't just insert themselves. When the Congress and the President of the United States appropriates money for a very narrow and particular purpose, for a state to insert itself by statute or otherwise and just say, we don't like it, and we want to take a look at it. I understand the oversight function. Unfortunately, this statute wasn't used for oversight. If what happened in the Senate was a series of oversight hearings last year where they asked us about our proposals and had counterproposals, that would be one thing. So I'm saying the opposite of legislating for one anecdote. I'm saying think of the players in other partisan and other combinations, and do you really want the state legislature to set the precedent, as has been set here, that when it doesn't like something the federal government is doing, it will insert itself as a speed bump, as a shortstop, to possibly block federal funds for a purpose that it doesn't like when the President and Congress have appropriated. I just ask everyone to think outside their partisan boxes, think of the various combinations, mm-hmm. if you really want this precedent to continue to be set. That's what I would say.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the explanation. But as I look at the bill itself, it would seem to me that if money comes from the Help America Vote Act, it is automatically appropriated to a special revenue fund that is then in the Secretary of State's office to use as they see fit, because that's what special revenue funds are. I'm getting a no.
Chair and Representative Vettel, no, we can't touch it. That would be illegal.
Representative.
According to 5.30, we can't touch it unless the legislature authorizes it. And that's what happened in 2018 and 2019. The money was sitting in the special revenue account, actually not in our office, in MMB. It was sitting in that account, and we couldn't tap it, and we were the last state in the United States of America to get access to that, because it didn't happen until the end of the 2019 session. So the money was appropriated in March of 2018. Every state in America got their money. Even the two or three states that have a law like this, they got their money. We got it last, and now we're paying the price for it in the 2020 election cycle.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So excuse my ineptness in understanding this. What I'm reading this bill to say is that if there is money from the Help America Vote Act,
yes,
it is appropriated to the Secretary of State, right?
Correct.
That money would then go into the special revenue fund that the Secretary of State office has.
I see. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
And Representative Vogel, I believe, as was stated here, that the 2003 money, they couldn't spend it until they came up with the match. The money that we passed last year, that was actually a year after we got it, we could have spent it. The federal government said we could spend it and come up with the match later, and that was part of our budget bill last year. This money here, it says we can spend it and come up with the match later. If this bill were to pass, the Secretary of State could then start spending it, but we'd have to appropriate the match either right away this year or next year. And that could vary. The next time they come down, they could say, we can't spend it till they come up with the match. And he can only spend it on the things that are listed in the bill from the federal government, what they can spend it on. I think, does that help answer your question?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's exactly what I was getting at, is that this money, if it comes, and I'm worried about the future as much as this situation now, because we're opening this up forever. So what I'm visualizing here is that there could be future years where there would be money. It would come automatically appropriated to the special revenue fund. The Secretary of State could then spend that money in anticipation of a match, but now they have committed the legislature to the match because they've spent it and we're not going to be in compliance with the law. So the way this thing is written, from my perspective, I think endangers our activities as a legislature in the future, because we could end up appropriating, well, we wouldn't appropriate the money, but we would either, what would we do? So I understand the dilemma that exists. I sat through the conference committee and actually sat there looking at each other, waiting for people to show up. I know how it was. And I actually voted for the bill on the floor. But I think by trying to correct something and then putting future legislatures on the hook for something that they don't know what it might be is not an appropriate thing for this committee to do. And that was my point, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Freiberg. I think it's pretty common sense. Secretary of State Simon, are you aware in any of the 46 other states that don't have a shortstop, as you put it, for the legislature, that any of their legislatures have expressed regret about not having election security money be directly spent, or any of their secretaries of state think that there needs to be more state oversight over federal funding coming to their state for election security?
Mr.
Chair and Representative Long, no, I don't. In fact, I met with blank stares from secretaries of state for both parties when they understand that we have this kind of law. As with anything that comes from the federal government for a particular purpose, you know, there just isn't this kind of mechanism in place. You know, maybe a more specific example would be, if I can play around with, you know, partisan role playing. Imagine that a Republican Congress and President Trump decides to appropriate HABA funds for the purpose of implementing a national photo ID for voting. And imagine a DFL legislature using this and saying, no, we're holding it up. I don't care what you did, President Trump or President whoever, Nikki Haley, whoever it is in 5 years or 6 years or 10 years. We have the statute in place and we just don't like it. I don't care what you did. We're not going to authorize it. We're not trading it for anything. We're just not going to do it. even though the President and the Congress authorized it. I think it's a dangerous precedent. I think it's unconstitutional. And I just think we have to think beyond current situations. So it's not about one anecdote. It's about what could happen in the future. I don't know why it was there in 2002 and 2003, but it's almost unheard of to have a law like this anywhere that I know of, where a state legislature can interfere with, even stop, federal appropriation of duly authorized funds from the President of the United States and Congress.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the money that was appropriate was for election security, and we know that Minnesota has been targeted in the past. We know that there are going to be efforts to target our election systems this cycle. We were the last state in the country to spend these funds last time, and there are only four states, as you mentioned, that have any holdup of those funds. If you were a hacker looking to hack an election system, would you take into account the slowness of a state to spend its election security funding?
Secretary Simon.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Long, I don't want to poke a stick in the eye of anyone who, might be thinking along those lines, but let me answer it this way. There are things we can't do this year, and that the counties and the cities who actually count the votes and train the election judges and own the equipment, that they can't do this year because of a 15-month or more delay from the legislature in 2018 and 2019. So whether that figures into an assessment from some foreign actor or any actor about which states they target, that's for them to decide.
Representative Albright, you said you have one
question
on this point. Or
exactly. I had one more question, Mr. Chair.
And I think the point that I wanted to maybe just help address for the benefit of the committee members is ask Ms. Roberts if you could clarify the process for federal funds as they would come into executive branch agencies in terms of the appropriation or the utilization of those federal funds.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, there is a portion of the legislature's chapter in statute 3.3005 that is for federal money expenditure review, and there are two similar processes for when federal fund requests come in. One, if it comes in during the budget session, and then a separate but similar process for the interim. And for example, in the regular budget process, when the governor submits their budget, and they're also required to submit federal fund requests, and you'll see those at the back of every agency budget pages, the statute says that 20 days after a governor's budget request that includes a request to spend federal money is submitted to the legislature, a state agency may expend money, including the request, unless, within a 20-day period, a member of the Legislative Advisory Commission requests further review. And if an LAC commission member requests further review, the agency may not expend the federal funds until the request has been satisfied and withdrawn, the expenditure is approved in law, or the regular session of the legislature is adjourned for the year. So that's the process when we're actually in session in the regular budget session. There's a similar process during the interim for legislative advisory commission review, and just the legislative advisory commission is generally the chairs of the committees that have oversight over a certain issue, and then the speaker, et cetera. So during an interim, again, the commissioner of MMB would submit requests, and we usually get requests in quite a group in October. And then again, there's a period where an LAC member can request further review, and that essentially stops the expenditure of the funds until that review is satisfied.
Thanks.
And we also have a publication on this that I could send to members if you would like more information.
My point by interjecting this is to maybe not an op-ed, but just to clarify for the purposes of precedent that this is not something that was an anomaly because of HAVA, but I can recall other LAC members denoting concerns about expenditures with regard to transportation projects, with regard to other projects in other executive branch agencies. So the depiction that the process is not streamlined or was established only by virtue of the HAVA, I think is a bit off the mark. And I appreciate the clarification, Ms. Roberts.
Representative Long, you had another question. I'm sorry. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Freeburg, Secretary of State Simon. I'm just curious. Being new, I've never been through this before and was surprised to see there is such a roadblock. And it was like night and day when I heard the testifier in a recent conversation we had over at the Capitol with legislators of how much stuff was done in the interim after the money was actually freed up. Do you have a fix on what resources and what expenses the state of Minnesota incurred to get this money freed up? Is there any, I know you were extremely busy, I know your staff was busy, you were trying to move things forward in the security realm at the same time, but there was no budget for you to try to get this money, you had to work hard to do it. I mean, what did this cost the state of Minnesota in dollars? That's what I'm curious.
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hewitt, hard to put a price tag on that, in terms of money. There are other types of price tags I could put on it in terms of just readiness. But in terms of money, hard to say. You know, we don't bill for our time, obviously, so hard to say. But, a lot of time and effort and energy and resources spent over 16 months or so to get that money finally approved. The one thing I would just generally say is Representative Green is right, actually, in terms of the legislature having to be vigorous over the executive branch. It doesn't matter who's in power, it doesn't matter which party. You got to be a watchdog over how money is spent. I absolutely agree, and you shouldn't abdicate that, which is why we do welcome and would in the future welcome any sort of inquiries, or I'll appear before you here to talk about how we're spending the HOPA money or whether you believe, leaving aside whether the federal government believes we've spent it in accordance with their wishes. I think you have every right as the legislature to make your own secondary judgment about whether you believe, even if the feds sign off on how we've spent it, to push back or agree or disagree with how we've spent the money or whether we're doing it within the five or six categories of the federal government. So we are, as every state will be, audited by the Election Assistance Commission, which is the federal agency in charge of, doing that, auditing the use of this money. But if you in the legislature had questions or, as I said, wanted me or anyone from our office to appear, we're happy to do that. You have every right to know, how we're spending the money. What I take issue with is this absolute speed bump and at least the potential to say, no, we're not going to spend the money at all in Minnesota. I mean, that is the right under the statute. You just say, no, we don't like the federal purpose. We don't like that the president and Congress have appropriated money for a specific purpose. And we, the state legislature, who did not appropriate the money, we're just going to, we have the ability to stop it with this law. So I just want to decouple that from the oversight function, which is important, and you should keep it up no matter who's governor, which party, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, Secretary of State, I'm all about oversight. Trust me, as my interim, I learned a lot about how important the legislator has that function and must do that. Last thing I just want to say is repeat what you said. There's going to be things we can't do because we didn't get this money in time. That scares me because we have a big election coming up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a few questions. Good morning, Secretary Simon. Could you refresh my memory? What was the HAVA appropriation amount?
Representative, Secretary Simon.
Old habits die hard.
It's the first meeting this year, so we can get back in the
seat. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hertas, the original outlay to Minnesota, it was all just population-based. So our share was $6.6
million. $6.6 million, okay. And within your office, is there any categorical buckets of cash that are restricted in how you use money in your office?
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, yes.
Okay. And Mr. Chair,
Hertas.
Thank you. If the money, the HAVA money, was never spent, what happens to it?
Secretary Simon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas. There, the federal government really watches closely. So most or all of it could be totally forfeited. They reserve the right to claw it back. If it's not spent within the window it's supposed to be spent, typically a five-year window, for the five or six purposes in federal statute, they will claw it back. They've made that very clear.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Secretary Simon, Do you think it's necessary for the federal government to fund our elections, or that we have the ability as a state to ensure the integrity of our own election system in compliance with the law?
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, I think the federal partnership going forward is essential, in part because when it comes to election security of the infrastructure, I'm talking about the physical stuff, the federal government itself, the intelligence agencies come into our office regularly. They'll be doing so again in the next few months. They do all sorts of stress tests and evaluations of our system, looking for soft spots, basically trying to hack us, to be blunt. And then they come up with a list of recommendations, and those recommendations have huge price tags. And so a federal financial partnership, I think, at least in the medium term, is essential.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Secretary Simon, I'm aware that with respect to, we have a dichotomy of elections. We have state elections, local elections. We have federal elections. And certainly the federal government has control over federal elections. And our own state constitution is, the federal constitution gives greater latitude in terms of uniformity of voting across the nation. For example, with regard to felon voting, some states, once you're a felon, you never get to vote. In other states, you earn that right back. In some states, if you're a felon and is still incarcerated, you get to vote in prison. Right. So there's a great variance of standard in terms of what is permissible with regard to federal elections and uniformity across the land versus that which the individual states set up their own rules. And so there's potentially a collision coming forward. And that editorial is one thing I wanted to make clear, and I think it's something we're going to have to deal with, because I don't think you want to be running two sets of elections, a set of federal elections that play by one set of rules and another one that plays by state set of rules. But most intriguing to me about the money and the election security issue is something that we had a discussion about last session, you and I, and the fact that you were boastful that your agency is a net contributor to the general fund, and I think the number was to the excess of 23 some million dollars, or maybe more. So it really, maybe you have restrictions on how you can use that money. The fact that it's not used and generated by your agency or by your department would suggest to me that $23 million was more than enough money to take care of the security issues that you were concerned about, and that maybe a lot of this is smoke and mirrors. It might have been nice to have the extra money and ease the funding, but your office is generating more money than it needs to operate, and so what's the big deal about the $6 million?
And Secretary Chair,
and members, thank you, Representative Hertas. You're right about that, and you're right to raise that point. I would just add that it's true. Our office generates whatever, I think it is, something like that, $21 million more per biennium than we cost to run, but we don't keep any of that money. That all goes to the general fund. Representative Nash had a bill last session. He'll have one again this year, which would allow our agency and perhaps others to keep, I think it's 2% in his bill, of those funds for exactly that purpose. So Representative Nash, who's not in this room, agrees with you, and I agree with him, that might be one way on the state level to take care of those problems, to set aside, and I don't know if the number is 2% or some other percentage, but allow us to keep, we don't keep it. So we generate that income, but we don't keep it. We don't have any access to it. It all goes back to the general fund. So that's an intriguing idea that Representative Nash is, it's his idea. I like the idea, and that's something we've been talking to him and others about as well. It's a fair point.
And members, if we can get this moved along, our next testifier we have that's here on vacation time, and we'd like to get through that bill also and get that so that person can go back to work and not use their vacation time to be here. So, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam. Any further questions? Anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against this bill? Seeing no one, I'll renew my motion that House File 3006 be referred to the Government Operations Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Ayes have it.
Thank you, members.
The bill is referred. Thank you, Secretary Simon. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. The next bill we have is a House File 1863, Representative Lilly. And members, 1863 is another one of our bills that we heard last year, had quite extensive hearing on it. While it was laid over for possible inclusion, we did hear the bill and maybe get this moved farther along. Anyway, I'll move that House File 1863, as amended, be referred back to the Committee on Ways and Means with the recommendation that it be...
It has to be amended first.
We have an amended, okay. I move that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means and recommendation to be referred to the General Register. And I believe there's an amendment.
Two amendments.
Okay. And the DE2 amendment is first. Representative Lilly, I'll move the DE2 amendment. Do you want to explain what this does and how it changes the bill?
Good morning, Chair and members. Welcome back. Nice to see you all, and welcome our new member. It's nice to see. I was curious what committees you would get, and it's perfect. As you can see, there's a lot going on here. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The DE2 amendment, both the amendments are pretty simple. It just clarifies that the employees, if this were to go into effect, that they'd actually have to return to work. So that if they chose, on their own to move on, to go to employment elsewhere, that this would not affect them. So they would not be paid. So this is requires simply that the employees would come back to the employment of the state of Minnesota.
And Representative Lee, this is the language that was in the omnibus bill from last year that
didn't
make it through the conference committee.
Yes, sir. And members, it didn't make it through, but it was amended beyond this committee, I believe, or something in conference committee or something, and then so it just kind of catches up to, and it makes a lot more sense.
So, members, without any further questions, we'll amend, moved the DE2 amendment. All in favor of the DE2 amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author wants, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. In the A2 amendment, Mr. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The A2 amendment.
To the A2 amendment, it's a technical correction. It was an oversight in the original drafting, and as it moved through it, we did not include the director of Legislative Coordinating Commission. So it just simply adds that that person and that group to the bill.
So, members, do we understand the commit? So I'll move the A2 amendment. Again, renew my motion for the A2 amendment to put this in the form that the author wants the bill. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment's approved. Describe your bill, and I see we have a testifier here, and if you want to describe your bill briefly and let your testifier speak.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. So the bill has been here before, so I don't know how, so we'll just kind of give you a quick overview. It's essentially ensures that our state employees that are in the employ of Minnesota, if we're not to finish our work in the odd years of the biennium, that they would be paid. We have a history in Minnesota where often employees have not been paid. In 2005, I think they were paid 50%, the federal government, as we know, they had a recent shutdown. Employees were not compensated. So this includes the workers that are in the executive branch, and just so everybody knows, it's a fancy name for basically most of the agencies throughout the state of Minnesota, legislative branch, so that's everybody in this building and across the street in the fancy Senate building. and but you know, our vital team, and of course the judicial branch also would be included. So you know, in 2011 we had one of the longest shutdowns in, you know, the country, maybe the longest shutdown in the country. And so this, what often happens is we have a lot of people that are on our team, and you know, we'll decide who's essential, and then there'll be some that are non-essential. But nonetheless, a lot of people will go through a lot of stress, and we hire people in good faith, and we hope that that they do good work. We expect them to do good work, and part of that is to treat them how like we'd all like to be treated, and to be sure that they're compensated. Some people just don't have the wherewithal, of course, to or capacity to handle life without pay for a while. There's many in this world. I'm sure Representative Vogel in his banking industry has seen people that are on the margins of life, and you know, every check matters. So while we, this is not a continuing resolution to keep government running, but this ensures that our team, our workers, that they're paid. And so this doesn't stop us from, you know, or negotiating and still fighting the fight. So that's essentially it. I have two folks, but I think the really important one to hear from is Ms. Christensen, and she works over here in MnDOT, and she has, I think, a pretty powerful story to tell from the last shutdown that we had as a state. And I'm glad that you were able to come, and she had to take a personal vacation to be here, and so I'm glad the chair recognized that. And, anyway, please introduce
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Thank you. I want to thank the chair and the committee for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Kelly Christensen, and next month marks my 10-year anniversary that I've been a Minnesota Department of Transportation employee. Additionally, my total years of state service will be 13 come May. I come here today in support of House File 1863. In order to understand why I presently support this bill, it's important you take a walk in time with me and understand some important Minnesota events that are now a part of our state's collective history. I was a MnDOT employee in the summer of 2011. The particular summer was memorable to me, and unfortunately the memories are not ones I ever want to repeat. I refer to the summer of 2011 as the year I and thousands of other state employees were used as pawns in a political tactic game. I was laid off for three weeks. I was at home not working, not collecting my regular paycheck for 20 days, when our state legislative leaders and governor could not only not balance the budget, but the money for my salary was not appropriated, and it was used as a strategic tool to try to make a point. 20 days of not working, if you think this was a fun vacation, this was not the case. The unease of not knowing when I would go back to work or when I would get paid again to pay my bills caused me considerable stress and anxiety, because there was literally nothing I could do to change the outcome that occurred in July of 2011. We were told by MMB that if the shutdown lasted longer than 30 days, we would lose our health insurance. I want you to think about that for a moment. I was on the brink of losing my health insurance for my family for no action or inaction of my own. I want to remind you as well, MNsure, the state's insurance exchange, did not yet exist in 2011. So I had no option if I were to lose my health insurance. I remember crying in a coworker's arms a few days before the shutdown, asking why we had to experience this, and she hugged me and told me she didn't know. I remember watching the news every day during the shutdown and wondering, was this the day our elected leaders would finally come to an agreement? As one individual who's gone through the experience, I can tell you it's one of the most frustrating and maddening experiences to be used as a bargaining chip of a game of who can blink first. To use state employee salaries as anything other than a means to pay employees for an honest day of work should not be allowed to continue anymore in state government. To use completely innocent lives and as something as important as my paycheck as a political strategy is immoral, uncalled for, and should be unthinkable. This completely archaic practice should never be used again in state government. At the conclusion of the 20 days in July of 2011, This was the longest government shutdown our state had seen. Is this the type of history we want for our state? I don't. The practice of withholding paychecks in that manner is completely unheard of in the private sector, and it's time we put an end to this. The summer of 2011 memories are never far from my mind in May of odd years. The legislature usually comes down to the wire in completing their tasks, and I'm left wondering, is this going to be a repeat of 2011? Let's fast forward to December of 2018 and look at our national events from our country. Our country embarked on the longest federal shutdown in its history. I couldn't help but sympathize with those federal workers. I also compared the events of 2018 with the events of 2011. There were many congressional leaders on both sides of the political spectrum that were quoted as saying they were not in favor of shutting down the federal government as a political tactic, and that using people's livelihoods and salaries to prove a point is immoral and ineffective at best. I was shocked when a bill was passed that it would allow federal employees to receive back pay when that shutdown was over. I was shocked because that was completely unheard of for us in 2011 as state employees. I was supportive, but I wondered why I, as a state employee, should not receive the same type of treatment. Was my worth less than that of a federal employee? It feels pretty demoralizing and degrading when I see support of federal employees, but my own state doesn't have something similar in place. I want you to consider this. If every legislator and governor completes their assigned job during odd years of balancing the budget, which includes making appropriations for our salaries, this bill will cost the state nothing, zero. And it is my hope that this bill will never have to be used, and it sits on the shelf getting dust because the governor and legislator can do their jobs by the May deadline that is defined by our state constitution. I am coming to you today asking for protection, that my paycheck is not going to be stolen from me like it was in 2011. Our state constitution says this. Article 1, Bill of Rights, reads, "Object of government is instituted for the security, benefit, and protection of the people." Please pass House File 1863. This will offer me and thousands of other state employees the protection and security we deserve from having our paychecks being taken from us by no fault or inaction of our own. We want to stop and prevent the extraordinary events that happened in 2011 from ever happening again. Please make the events of July of 2011 a part of our state's history once and for all. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Hertas, Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that testimony. It's moving, and Representative Lilly. It reminds me of a circumstance I, as a private contractor, decades ago, provided work, material, labor to about 23 different locations of a national chain here in the metropolitan area. Their fiscal year end was June 30th, like the state of Minnesota's, and they were on a big campaign to spend money before the year end to affect the P&L for the tax liability. Took months and months and months to get payment for all that work. And so the same type of stresses that you are talking about, not being able to make payroll, not be able to pay payroll taxes, just a lot of stress. And so I feel for that. But my question is directed towards all of the vendors to the state of Minnesota. When we have these circumstances, maybe House Research knows, what happens to those people when there's a government shutdown? If they're in the middle of building a bridge, does it stop? Or was the money appropriated for that contract? Is that there, and does that get distributed? But I think this issue of shutdown maybe extends far beyond just state employees. So do you know the answer to that?
Representative Lowley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, and it's a really a great question, and I do not know the answer. I do know, you know, many of us that kind of lived through the shutdown. I remember it was hugely costly to Minnesota and other factors, and you're kind of pinpointing it is because they'd have to start and stop projects. I think there was a lot of MnDOT projects that were had to, you know, basically corn them or, you know, corn them up and crews left and came back. But I'd appreciate some help from staff if they have actual real answers other than anecdotal.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertos and committee members, I don't have specific examples of contracts that were stopped in 2011, but it is true that since the funding stopped being available to agencies, then contractors couldn't be paid during the shutdown. So as Representative Lilly said, that projects that were underway needed to be stopped during the shutdown pending further appropriations to pay for them to continue.
Representative Hertos.
Well, thank you for that, and thanks for your effort on this. I think the optics, you know, the dichotomy between public sector employment and private sector employment, certainly those people that do business with the state, you know, there's always that inherent risk. Do we sometimes pay more for contracts because of it, because of what that might mean? We've got all sorts of provisions in state government that certainly drive up the cost of the private sector, but it nonetheless, you know, voters out there work in both sides of the fence, and the only concern I would have on this issue is the optics that government takes care of itself and not the rest of the economy. So we need to avoid shutdowns. We need to have a dynamic that doesn't put us in the place that we've been in and most recently. And we also saw over the past many years increasing numbers of government shutdowns. The tendency, I reported to, I don't know if it was this committee or a different one, maybe it was Ways and Means, but in the history of shutdowns, they have been increasing in their frequency. And it seems that the executive branch has found an effective backdoor to negotiate with a triumvirate of leaders and cut the legislator out of the process and force things into gridlock. So that's unfortunate when it happens. It happens regardless of political party. And, you know, I don't think our founders intended it to be that way. Generally, when bills got vetoed and it looked like you're headed to a shutdown, it was usually because it spends too much. And we've seen in recent trends government shutdowns because we don't spend enough. So quite the opposite. So anyway, thank you.
Members, and we're running, you know, it's 9:33 according to my watch, so we're running late here. So if we can make this short and move on. That was more of a comment than a question. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just a point of clarification, and either Ms. Roberts or Mr. Gehring can maybe satisfy my curiosity. In each one of the divisions, and I'll just use subdivision one as an example on line 1.11, it talks about the continuation of monies being appropriated annually from the fund which an appropriation was made. So if we have not enacted a budget, is it fair to say that they have no money to appropriate fund from a fund? And how does that work? I think I'm missing something, but I'm hoping you can fill in the gaps.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, the way the bill is addresses this is when it's referencing the appropriation. Sorry, we have two versions of it. So you're looking at 1.11 on the original version of the bill.
I apologize. Yeah, I did not look at the DE.
So I believe it's referencing the base and the appropriation that was made previously. That would be the source. That's how they would determine the source of the funding. So there's a, sorry.
So Ms. Roberts, maybe I can be a little more direct. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if an agency or that fund we appropriate money on a biennial basis to that fund. And perception is that that is filled up and then it's drained down to zero over the course of the biennium. So at the conclusion of the biennium, if we don't refresh and reappropriate money within a new budget, are they dealing with some type of reserve that we are not aware of, or do they, where is that money going to come from? If we appropriate the money and it's gone out the door, where's the money still left over that they appropriate from? Or is it from an emergency reserve or LCC or something like that?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, the appropriation is from the fund level. So the funds are, for example, the general fund, which is...
Okay, so it's coming from the general fund?
Well, the general fund or other funds. You can see,
okay.
There's a chart in the fiscal note that gives you just an illustration. This is a snapshot, and it's an old snapshot now, but to show you sort of the...
Okay.
So the breakdown between the general fund and other funds, but it would depend on the previous appropriation for that agency.
Right. So, Ms. Roberts, Mr. Chair, thank you. That does help clarify it. So it's really coming from the general fund as necessary and certified by the agencies that they need to carry forward in benefits and salary until a new budget is approved by the legislature and the executive branch.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, it would come from the general fund if that was the original source of funding or the previous source of funding for that agency. It would come from other funds if that was the source of funding for the agency. For example, we have several boards that may be funded from special revenue funds, so that in that case they would be funded through that fund.
And I know I'm getting into the tall weeds here, Ms. Roberts, but just as a question. So in the event of, say, the Agency for Sustainability, where they are relying upon interagency agreements to fund their employee benefits and payroll for their people, so if all the agencies are relying upon money but also the interagency agreements, how does that work?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I think I would have to think about that. I'm not sure I don't know the answer right away. I would have to think about that.
And members, remember, this is a bill that was a part of the omnibus bill last year that we all voted on in the omnibus bill. When we came out of here, did make it through the conference committee. So we've had these discussions last year. So it's just, I know we're first day back in committee and we're trying to remember this stuff, but this is something we hashed this stuff out last year, once before, so.
And Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. I think everyone, you know, sometimes comes into the second year of a session or even, you know, coming off a weekend and give it a little less fog in the brain with a new set of eyes. Representative Lill and I go a long way back, you know, unfortunately, you know, depending upon your perspective. Appreciate that, and then I think I share our desire to certainly respect the work that is done by the agencies, but as Representative Hurtas said, anytime you take an employment situation, it's at risk of the employer. So there is risk in that. Thank you.
Representative Baum, make it quick.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And it'd be nice to have a reference document maybe that could be generated. It's along the same lines because the DNR, Secretary of State's MnDOT have funds coming in. Especially the DNR has a huge part of their budget coming in, and they go into designated accounts. Some of the intricacies and logistics that would be, you know, for the general fund would maybe priority to agencies that don't have these other funds, and it'd be nice to have maybe that for future with the debate of this bill. The other part of it is there's such an inconsistency of essential services definition in previous administrations. They had, during Pawlenty, when there was a shutdown, if a MnDOT project was started, it continued because it was stupid not to. Another governor didn't have that same decision and shut down. Things were open. And I was sitting next to a governor during this shutdown and talking about different things. And I asked, why are not food banks considered essential? So it might, I'd love the author of this bill to add maybe a definition of essential services so that it goes beyond just this narrow scope, because I think there are a lot of things that we'd like to clarify are essential no matter who the administration is. Thank you.
So, members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1863, as amended, be referred back to the Committee on Ways and Means with a recommendation that it be referred to the general, referred to the General Register, where it was last year. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill is referred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And members, again, reminder, we'll be meeting Monday evening after session, and that notice went out, but just to remind people with that, members, we are adjourned.